Ani, and welcome to Bomsida, an Aboriginal news magazine program that features news, current affairs, a focus on community and culture, spotlights on entertainment and great tunes, and every flavor from Aboriginal artists. I'm your host, Jennifer Ashwasige. Chilcotin Tribal Chief Joel Fonts says no amount of money will make up for destroying Fish Lake and turning it into a tailings pond in the proposed Prosperity Mining Project proposal. Inuit communities around the Lancaster Sound area are breathing a sigh of relief after winning a court battle to stop seismic testing in their territory. A conference on Indigenous community engagement is marking the 160th anniversary of the signing of the Robinson-Huron Treaty, and Economic Development Spotlight is on CRECO, a Cree Regional Economic Enterprises company based in Quebec. All these stories plus great tunes coming your way right after the news. Here's your national Aboriginal news. North Vancouver Island MP John Duncan has been appointed the new Minister of Indian Affairs. Duncan has replaced Chuck Stroll, who has been shuffled to the Ministry of Transport. In a press release, Assembly of First Nations National Chief Sean Atleo welcomed Stroll's replacement. Atleo also said he is well acquainted with Duncan and looks forward to working with him in his new role. Meanwhile, Stuart Phillip, president of the BC Union of Indian Chiefs, told Straight.com the newly appointed minister needs to convince Prime Minister Stephen Harper to fully endorse the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. And since Duncan was previously the parliamentary secretary to the former Minister of Indian Affairs, Anishinaabeg Nation Grand Council Chief Patrick Madabi hopes the issues will keep moving forward. The Globe and Mail reports Duncan is a longtime advocate of encouraging private home ownership on First Nations. That concept is the subject of Tom Flanagan's latest book, Beyond the Indian Act. The Globe also reports private home ownership advocates see private home ownership as the key to investment and wealth in Native communities, and critics fear it will undermine treaties and allow reserve lands to be sold off to outsiders. A Nunavut judge has blocked seismic testing in Lancaster Sound just one day before testing was to begin. It was a major legal victory for the Inuit community after court found a long-planned study posed too many dangers to marine life and the people who depend on them. The ruling further cements the right of Inuit to be fairly consulted on activities taking place on their lands. Okalik Ijak is the president of the Kikini Inuit Association. Ijak says the communities around Lancaster Sound were not consulted about the research project in the beginning.
Because the Indian Association found out basically through the communities, because the communities started to us their concerns about 3 or 4 months ago when they received letters about the fact that this research had been approved. So basically, it was about 3 or 4 months ago we found out from our own communities.
She hopes the court victory now means a new relationship with government.
We're very excited that finally someone is listening to Inuit concerns. We regret that we felt we had to go to court to get the government, both levels of government, to listen to us. So we've taken a step, and I hope this is a start of a relationship we have with government.
Government scientists say seismic testing work involves firing an air gun underwater to gather data and presents little risk to wildlife. But the Inuit say previous seismic testing involving older, more intrusive methods, including dynamite, produced dead and deaf seals and altered whale migratory patterns for decades. The Manitoba and federal government have announced they'll spend $9.47 million to provide nurse training for Northern First Nations. They're partnering with 3 Aboriginal organizations to deliver the year-and-a-half-long licensed practical nurse training program in 6 First Nation communities. Manitoba's contribution totals $4 million and will help fill recruitment needs in a high-demand healthcare sector. It's being predicted there will soon be a labor shortage in Ontario. And according to Jack Falkins with the Ontario Native Literacy Coalition, tapping into the Aboriginal workforce could solve that issue. Falkins told a Simcoe newspaper, "The Aboriginal population in Canada is the fastest growing and the youngest population, perfectly positioned numbers-wise and age-wise to fill the gaps." Falkins spoke at a meeting, a latest in a series of consultations across the province to determine determine local employment needs in the public and private sector. Information from the consultations will be used to ensure program offering skills development and employment training for Aboriginal people are geared toward fulfilling the most urgent needs. The Chilcotin Nation chiefs in BC maintain their opposition to the Taseko Prosperity Mining Project. Taseko Mining Company has proposed to turn Fish Lake into a tailings pond for its gold and copper mining activities. And Fish Lake is not only sacred to the Chilcotin Nation, it has also been listed as one of the top 10 fishing lakes in the province. Energy and Mines Minister Bill Bennett has announced a plan to make a public offer to First Nations in the Fish Lake area for royalty sharing on the proposed mining project. Chilcotin Tribal Chief Joe Alphonse calls that a desperate move.
I think it's, you know, it's an attempt. It's, again, trying to mislead the public. You know, it's a desperate attempt by a desperate government. Desperate project approved, and you know, it's about how you look in the media.
Alphonse says the province can continue to make offers, but the Chilcotin Nation have court precedents to back up their case and will continue their fight. Plus, he says the project is not new.
I think they've gone through the process in the 90s. This is not the first time they tried to push this mud through. Back in the 90s, you know, during that time and era, Department of Fisheries and Oceans had a known net loss policy of fish habitat, and they came up upon that and they decided to back off at that time, and the response to Taseko Prosperity Group was that we'll be back when there's a new provincial government. And you know what, not only did they get a new provincial government, the NDP is no longer in, they got a provincial Liberal Party in. Not only that, they weren't counting on the fact they got a new Conservative Party in federally as well, both government pro industry, and they figure they got the ability to steamroll any First Nation right through now.
Alphonse adds, in a worst case scenario that the mine project is approved, they will do everything in their means to stop development from happening in Chilcotin Nation territory. A 32-year-old man will face a sentencing circle in his community after pleading guilty to the manslaughter of his common-law wife 2 years ago. The Pangasi First Nation member in northern Manitoba entered his plea in court August 9th. The Winnipeg Free Press reports he'll also have to face his victim's family along with his community next month. Sentencing circles bring together offenders, their victims, and community members in a traditional setting, which concludes with recommendations for the judge, who still ultimately decides punishment. In Nova Scotia, CTV reports the Department of Indian Affairs has upheld the election of a convicted sex offender as chief of Chapel Island First Nation. The decision by INAC cancels out the band council resolution passed by 5 of 6 councillors aimed at keeping Wilbert Marshall from taking office after he was elected to the post last month. An INAC spokesperson told media the decision was reviewed and has been determined to be in violation of Indian Act election rules. Former Chief Kenneth Basque lost to Marshall by just 5 votes and has until the end of this month to file an appeal of the election. Basque told CTV it's shameful and contrary to Mi'kmaq tradition that the federal act allows a sexual offender to hold office. He added that the Indian Act should be abolished and replaced with something else. Finavera Renewables Incorporated has signed a participation agreement with the McLeod Lake Indian Band in BC. The agreement sets out guidelines for engagement between Finavera and the McLeod Indian Lake Band and represents a commitment by the parties to enter into discussions and develop further agreements. In a statement, Chief Derek Orr says the community supports Finavera and others in the wind energy business as they represent the future for electric power generation. He adds, when done in a responsible way, wind energy, unlike hydro dams, gives power without destroying the land. Meanwhile, Jason Back, CEO of Finavera, says the participation agreement illustrates their commitment to building a long-term, mutually beneficial relationship with the McLeod Indian Lake Band. And under the agreement, several key areas will be addressed, including training and employment opportunities, assessment of potential project impacts, and economic development opportunities. And that's your National Aboriginal News. Leg and condition of crimes. Let's drop that lake of the woods dub on him. Geronimo. There's rhythm in the water from where my life come. There's power in the air. We live by the drum. There's rhythm in the water from where my life come. There's power in the air. We live by the drum.
Real man live by the drum.
Live by the drum.
Yellow man live by the drum.
Live by the
drum. Black man live by the drum.
Live by the drum.
White man live by the drum. Where I'm from, we say the lick is a drum. When you battle in the night, you could hear the beat hum. Some time ago, rhyme and flow, always phenomenal. We lost that rhythm, now it's time to find it, yo. Travel overseas, oversee and see breeze. From the west coast, where they still are drumming on the trees. Down to New Orleans, these we slapping on their knees. Even elbows, shelto, modern Maori fellows. Party rocker, haka, staka, come on, they are feltos. Come with me and come with me, come and see, yo, come on, say hello, est de la pique. Hooli tambour lancé, des messages du village, au village très loin. Mais peut-être en Guinée, où est toujours dans son rêve. Talking drum of Africa, back to America. Across the land, we share with you. There's peace in the area. Whenever there is dance, dance your style. So dance, dance, dance your style. So dance, dance, dance your style. Searching for the key to life. It was here the whole while. There's rhythm in the water, from where my life come. There's power in the air, we live by the drum. There's rhythm in the water, from where my life come. There's power in the air, we live by the drum. Red man live by the drum.
Live by the drum.
Yellow man live by the drum.
Live by the drum.
Black man live by the drum.
Live by the drum.
White man live by the drum. Africa Bambada, Africa Bada Bum. Shiva's drum said nada, and that is where we're from. Nowhere, everywhere, everyone from the nun. Drum ring, hoop dance in a circle round the sun. On the beat like a horse to the sky I ride. With Siberian shamans there right by my side. Heard a drum in the funeral of Vietnam. For the Mongo, we sing the same song in my land. We band together, yes, together we're a band. Hustlers in harmony, in tune with the land. No, I can't say that, unless I'll take a bass shooter. Walking beauty to the beat, and remain a straight shooter. We all have our own turns and instrumentals. But party together, when we find the right tempo. So dance, it's dance your style. Searching for key to life, it was here the whole while. There's rhythm in the water, from where my life come. There's power in the yeah, we live by the drum. There's rhythm in the water, from where my life come. There's power in the air, we live by the drum. So dance, dance, dance your style. So dance, dance, dance your style. So dance, dance, dance your style. So just want the key to life, it was here the whole while.
That was Live by the Drum, title track for Bob Kinew's CD produced by Indie Ends Productions. No amount of money is going to budge the Chilcotin Nation to allow Taseko Mining Company to turn their sacred Fish Lake into a tailings pond for an open gold and copper pit mining project in BC. The province has given the company permission, but word is still waiting from the federal government on the project's future, and Chilcotin Nation members are hoping the feds will turn the project down, especially after a federal review panel has stated the project will have a detrimental impact on the environment, fish, and wildlife in the area. Chilcotin Nation Tribal Chief Joe Alphonse says everything is sitting in limbo right now, but if the project does get the green light, they'll do everything they can to ensure it doesn't happen.
We're currently waiting for the recommendation to be delivered to the federal government, and We believe the report come back. The federal review panel that reviewed the environmental impacts and whatnot, the recommendation not to proceed forward with the mine. However, there's a lot of political pressure to get the federal government to okay the mine anyway. And in the event, we feel it might be the first time that would actually happen occur. So the push is on. It's the heat's definitely been turned up.
So I understand that the province is wanting to make a public offer of money to First Nation communities to ensure that the project go ahead.
I think it's an attempt. It's again trying to manipulate the public. It's a desperate attempt by a desperate government to get a desperate project approved, and it's about how you look in the media. It's about meeting their requirements, but at the end of the day, what you're still doing is we have the largest sockeye run on the Fraser River, the most consistent sockeye run, the Chilco Lake sockeye run. Fish Lake itself was really one of the top 10 fishing lakes in the province of BC, using their own statistics, the Provincial Ministry of Environment statistics. So you know, the whatever they're willing to try to shell out still does not replace, you know, the loss of an environment. And you know, it's not only losing fish; it's about are the cultural, spiritual significance to Chilcotin people. That's a very spiritual place for us. So we don't condone and that type of activity at all or anything. So.
And Taseko Mining is proposing to turn Fish Lake into a tailings pond.
Yes, Taseko is proposing to use Fish Lake as a tailings pond, which would mean that the whole lake would be eliminated. There would be no more Fish Lake, and no more fish for that matter. Their plans to create another lake and replant that lake with fish, and they would rename that lake Prosperity Lake. But I don't believe we have the technology that we can just go and dig a hole anywhere we want and create a top 10 fishing lake in any province. If we had that technology, sure, we would have done that already.
And how do you think things are looking right now for this Tsilhqot'in Nation regarding that public offer for money, or where do you think the next step is going?
They can offer whatever they want. If they want to get serious, where was their offer like this? We just finished the Honey with the Tsilhqot'in Aboriginal Right and Title case. That's a title case one in BC Supreme Court, and probably the largest Aboriginal right and title case ever won in any Supreme Court, in any Canadian court system. And if we're going to get treated like this, what hope is there for any other First Nation anywhere? That offer, suddenly they're going to be serious with their offer. In that court case, we were ordered twice to go to the negotiating table. Twice we went to the negotiating table. And, the last go-around, Canada didn't even want to show up at that table. So, now suddenly they're going to be sincere and make a legitimate offer to us. I don't think so.
Had there been any consultations from the inception of the project proposal?
The consultation process that they want to follow is process where here's their plan. Don't ask any questions. That's the way it is. Approve it right now. Taseko had seven different options of mine that specific area, and we said if your plan calls for the destruction of Fish Lake and any potential runoff into Taseko Lake, then there's no deal on our end. If you want to mine that area and do so in an environmentally sound way, we would support that. We're not opposed to development. But first and foremost, we have to look after the environment. The environment's going to look after us. And so the consultation process and the guidelines, that they're using, I think they've pulled out from the dark ages as far as we're concerned. The consultation, you want to come in here, you want to extract our resources, you come through our doors, you meet with us in good faith, and you come up with strong plans based on good environmental laws and how are you going to our losses, and there has to be a benefit to us. And none of those things they're willing to do, therefore we're not going to engage in that activity.
And how confident are you that the federal government will say no to the project?
You know what? We can. How confident am I? I don't know if I can say how confident I am, but I guess at the end of the day, all I can do is hope for the best, but also be prepared for the worst, and remain and just hope that there's common sense prevails here, not the economy. I think this is more about local economy, Williams Lake, and people wanting, to have their properties and whatnot increased just for a simple case of the announcement that the mine's going to go through, and we're not willing to sell off on any portion of our culture and traditional territories.
And you were just saying too that at the end of the day, you'd have to also be prepared for the worst. And what preparations have you made for the worst case scenario?
worst case scenario, you know, I think we would, you know, we've had 1864. There was a road building crew that wanted to come through our territory and without the approval of First Nation people and our people, and they were asked and told they had to pay a fee. They refused to do that, trying to build a road up to, you know, the gold fields north of us. So this is not first rush coming through our territory, and if they want to go down that road, we'll do everything in our means. If we have to sit on the road and stop every development from happening in the Chilton, we'll do it. And we believe we'll get a lot of support. We feel right across the province and throughout Western Canada and elsewhere, First Nations are under attack all over. I think, you know, the first Nation that holds I think, you know, to stop development, the issue is going to snowball. I think, you know, we've gone back in time, being at the Assembly of First Nations in Winnipeg. An elder one told me there, it feels like 1975 all over again. So where First Nations have to use whatever means to prevent what they protect what they believe in.
That was Joe Alphonse, tribal chief of the Chilcotin Nation. Inuit communities around Lancaster Sound are breathing a huge sigh of relief after winning a court injunction to stop seismic testing from happening in their territory. The injunction was awarded by the court in the nick of time on August 8th when the seismic testing research project was going to begin the very next day. Okalikijak is the president of the Kikini Inuit Association.
Very excited that finally someone is listening to Inuit concerns. We regret that we felt we'd go to court to get the government, both levels of government, to listen to us. We've taken that step, and I hope this is a start of a better relationship we have with Inuit.
When did you first find out that the seismic testing was going to take place?
Because the Inuit Association found out basically through the communities, because the communities started to come to us with their concerns about 3 or 4 months ago, when they received letters about the fact that this research had been approved. Basically, it was about 3 or 4 months ago we found from our own communities.
Which communities were those?
That was Arctic Bay, Grease Fjord, Resolute Bay, Pond Inlet, and Clyde River are the ones most impacted, that would be most impacted.
And what were the concerns about the seismic testing?
The concerns include Inuit have been through, experienced seismic testing in the past, in the 70s and 80s, and found that it impacted on the wildlife that we depend on for food. Inuit were finding dead seals. We were finding that belugas and other whales were coming back for years at a time. So we were very concerned about not just the short-term impact, but the long-term impact as well.
And also because people rely on those for food, right?
Yes, they're our livelihood, and they supplement our resources, and one can't replace renewable resources that we eat with non-renewable resources that are extracted.
How long was the court case, since you just found out a few months or 3 or 4 months ago with the letters going to the community members, and when was the issue brought to court?
I got approval from our executive committee last Thursday, a week ago Thursday. We filed a notice of intent on Friday to give some notice to the ship that was going to leave on Saturday from Iceland. And we filed on last Thursday. It took about a week to get the approval from our own executive and then to get it filed with the court.
Well, that really didn't take that long, though.
No. I think the Inuit court felt it was important that we know of the outcome because the ship was already in Nunavut, already in our region to start testing. I think it was today.
The ruling also helps Inuit rights in the area to ensure that community members are consulted on anything that goes on in their territories.
Yeah, if I hear you correctly, I think this is important not just for the Inuit of the Arctic. It's important for the whole region as well as the territory for Inuit, because we have a land claims agreement that basically lays a good foundation for consultation with Inuit and to work with government for anything that happens in our areas. It's too bad that both levels of governments didn't feel that they had to follow their own obligations under the rank claim to get this far.
Yes.
Because every step of the way we've been saying that QIA wants to work with the governments to see how and if this project is beneficial for all parties.
So there was no initial consultation to begin with?
There was no initial consultation. This project was approved before it got involved, and then we had to intervene.
So if the scientists choose to appeal, what then?
Well, I guess we'll take that step if it happens, and we'll wait for an outcome at that. But QA, we felt we had to go to court, that we felt we had to court for the government to listen to us, and hopefully this will be a relationship with government.
That was Okaleki Jack, president of the Kikini Inuit Association. Now here's Missy Nod with Happy in the Sun from her album For No Reason at All. Indigenous Communities is a three-day conference marking the 160th anniversary of the Robinson-Huron Treaty in Ontario. The conference included many discussions. For instance, the treaty itself was discussed, resources, reclamation, the globalization of resource extraction, and Anishinaabe political discourse, to name just a few of the talks that occurred over the course of the conference. Carl Heal with Concordia University is one of the organizers of the event. The conference ran from August 10th to the 13th in Sault Ste. Marie, the area where the treaty was signed in 1850.
It was a conference that was organized in honor of the 160th anniversary of the Robinson Treaties of 1850. And the idea behind it was, while we were honoring the treaties, we'd speak to treaty issues and resource issues that concerned not only, you know, Robinson-Huron treaties, but people who are involved in negotiations, agreements, and resource use, both positively and negatively, from around North America and the globe. so we could try and, you know, live up to some of the vision that Shinwok and the other leaders had in signing the treaties.
And so just to give a bit of a background information, basically what would have been the intention, or how would we be able to live up to those treaties now?
Well, the intention behind the treaty with the signatories, at least from the Aboriginal, from two perspectives, the Europeans want access to the resources on the North Shore of Lake Huron and Superior, specifically the right to mine for copper and other minerals, and that was their efforts. For the Anishinaabe to sign those treaties, they sought to, A, recognize and share the resources on the land in an effort to improve, maintain, and develop our lives and our communities, while at the same time allowing comers the ability to live with us. And it was supposed to be done in a feeling of equality and respect, with the intention that these treaties belonged in the realm of sacred law and were not just words on paper.
And so where do you think that stands today?
Well, the First Nations still have that perspective that this was about sharing and granting access, an ability to maintain and develop our economy. For a lot of Europeans, they just think they are words on a piece of paper. Many even think today the treaties have no meaning. They should just be done away with. They're old, they're just wrong. They're old documents. But yet for First Nations, they are relevant.
Yeah, I've dabbled in treaty research and also reading media news stories every single day over the past 20 years or more. It seems like the dialogue hasn't really changed since the 1850s.
The dialogue has changed. I found dialogue it's not really changed, but what I find now is that there's more people willing to listen than there was 20 years ago.
Okay.
So I think that's an improvement, just the fact that there's more people who want to listen. Because through listening will come change, right? So I think that's a big step.
So can you tell me a little bit about some of the topics or the discussions that are coming up in the conference?
We've been talking about the Robinson-Huron Treaty. There was a discussion about the Temagame Anishinaabe and how they never signed the treaty or agreed to it. That it was an act of fraud on the part of at least one of the Indian agents involved, and that the government has chosen to agree with the act of fraud rather than with what the Temagami say. I've talked about how the 1850 treaty should be seen as an international document in both Canada and the United States rather than just as a document internal to Canada. Other people have spoken about the uranium mining at Serpent River on the community. There's a talk going on right now about the Soldier Settlement Acts of World War I and how that resulted in land theft and exploitation. Other discussions are dealing with water resources, forest resources in British Columbia, globalization of resources, development of hydroelectricity in Quebec and how that's the Cree concepts of what they believe development is, not what Quebec government's development is, sugar bush use, and land management issues as well. And that's pretty much all of it in a nutshell.
And who's attending this conference?
Who's attending? A lot of presenters. About 60% of the presenters are Aboriginal. And the vast majority of those are Aboriginal, either myself, an academic in university, although we're outnumbered by Aboriginal students, actually, that are doing master's and PhDs now. And those are interspersed with non-natives presenting papers. And then the audience members are made up of largely people from Garden River, Batchewana, and the Sioux Tribe people, as well as a few from Mishapocotton and Walpole Island. So quite a diverse number of community. And then there's a few people from the government here, MNR, Ministry of Northern Development, Mines and Forests, and Parks Canada.
That was Carl Heal, organizer of a conference entitled Engaging Indigenous Communities, Resources, Rebellion, and Resurgence, which marked the 160th anniversary of the Robinson-Huron Treaty. We'll turn the spotlight onto CREECO, which is a Cree regional economic enterprises company based in Quebec. And Nation Talk recently did an interview with the company's president and chairman, Jack Blacksmith.
First off, I'm a Cree from Iwishi, North Quebec, and were the people that signed the Jane-Northern-Quebec Agreement back in 1975. And within that agreement, a body was created called the Board of Compensation, who was the entity created to look after all the monies and administer all the monies related to that agreement. And the Board of Compensation realized right from the onset that certain situations had to be looked at in terms of possibilities for economic development and job creation. And they started a company called Cree Construction. And that company was officially started back in 1975 or whatever the year was, but in the 70s. And this company took on contracts that were more low-scale opportunities that existed within the development of that hydro developments in the, on the Uisci. And then from there, the board started to look at the various, they commissioned some sort of study to further look into what we can do for our world in terms of economic development. And CRECO was formed. CRECO stands for Cree Regional Economic Enterprises Company. A regional company by any means in terms of the opportunities that that the Crees would be going after. And we, when that company was created, it was created as the main shareholder of the companies that were in existence already. So, and then every other company that we have created to date has always gone into CRECO, into the CRECO set of companies. So we have pretty good operations right now. We have maybe about 8 or 9 companies that are our own, and then we have the joint ventures that we've done over the course of a number of years for economic development.
And I understand that there are a number of companies, we're talking about senior level type companies in a number of industries, Air Quebec, for example, and a variety of in that nature, is that correct?
Yes, sir. As I said, we created the Cree Construction Company, and Cree Construction Company is probably one of the oldest companies that are currently in operation in Quebec, so it gives you a sense of history in terms of what the company has done, the expertise and the capabilities of this company. And we also have our flagship in terms of the Cree situation as to a company that we are very proud of, and that's Air Quebec. And Air Quebec was formed back in 1982 as a joint venture between Austin Airways and the Crees, and the Crees owned 51%, Austin Airways owned 49%. We bought them out 6 years later, and we've been on our own in terms of operations of Air Quebec since 1988, so we've been new. We're doing very, very well. Even at the time when the airlines were suffering, we were not in that same situation. Our company did very, very well. And then we have other companies too that we look at. Jetstar ADC is a catering and janitorial company, if you will, that we have. And we did some projects out in our territory, and we also did them outside our territory too, just to get some more employment for people. We also have a ground handling, airport ground handling facility called Valpiro. And we have other companies. We have EU Power that we formed. EU Power is, we are part in partnership with 6 other Cree communities to focus on hydro development, energy development of all sorts within the territory for the future. And being part of the process in terms of ownership, not only of those contracts, but being part owner of those projects that we'll be looking at in the future. And then we have a whole bunch of other joint ventures that we have with the Cree communities within their territory, and the Cree community and the other communities, other First Nation communities from other parts of the country too.
That was Jack Blacksmith, president and CEO of CRECO. We'll continue with that interview right after we hear a song from the Breeze Band. Here's Beg, Borrow, and Steal.
Saw you the other night, baby.
before the song, we were listening to a Nation Talk interview with Jack Blacksmith, the president and chairman of CRECO. So we'll continue that now.
We've never forgot where we came from, too. We didn't have very much knowledge of business and everything else, but we had sheer determination that we were going to succeed in the things that we do. And I think that's something that the average people really look at in terms of whenever they start up something, they're really determined to see it succeed. And I think it's a real good thing. And with mindset in terms of saying that we will succeed, I mean, the challenges, of course, are still challenges, but they become easier for us. We understand them more. We understand how we can jump over the hurdle, if you will, in terms of certain situations that are given to us and or that we meet in terms of the business opportunities that we look at. So when you look at the situation, I mean, for instance, this EU power, we don't have the necessary skills ready to fully develop the line of development regarding energy projects. But for business concepts, we do have that. We do have that knowledge in terms of running a business and in terms of trying to get a success. And we know that the issues that are directly related to that company of power in terms of energy development, we need assistance in that. And we went after that assistance. We hired on an engineering firm that's very, very important to us in terms of our overall operation. We signed a memorandum of understanding with them to further develop our company. We hired a CEO that the individual knows all about energy development, has been there, done that, and that individual is going to bring in an enormous source of knowledge to the table for us Crees. So for whatever we do, for whatever it is that we face, there are very tough challenges. It's not only us. I mean, the First Nations across Canada probably face the same thing. I've seen all sorts of joint ventures that are working very, very well across Canada. And again, I say to myself, probably maybe about 80% of the time, the First Nation group did not have the expertise, but rather they took that expertise from a certain individual and to further develop their potential, their business opportunity. So challenges, yes, they're out there. They're very, very serious. But if we have commitment, you have determination and an understanding where you want to be, those challenges are not as great as they seem to be.
Well, you're certainly proof positive that I guess anything can be overcome. I know there's a great deal of commitment to ensure that there's engagement of the community. And just, I would imagine, by the sheer size and scale of the operations that you undertake, you would require quite a bit of skill development throughout the ranks, regardless of in whatever capacity someone was engaged, whether it's in the airline industry or it wouldn't matter, I would think. Has CRECO had active involvement? Has just the community leadership been actively engaged in trying to ensure that the training and the skill level is there amongst the community members? And how do the community members view it?
Yeah, for sure. That's something that we look at in terms of any job opportunities that we talk about in the Cree world. And we're not alone in this thing in terms of trying to develop those opportunities for people. There are resources out in our government level that really help with any project that we have. Cree Human Resource Development, which is an organization within our overall government body, CRA, they provide tremendous assistance in terms of training programs, financially and professionally, in terms of some of the programs that we can develop with them. So they're a major player in terms of providing the necessary expertise for us to be able to train our people properly. More recently, we've been working with that particular group to try to get some money from the federal government to train our people in the construction industry. And I heard a week and a half ago that we signed both agreements with the federal and provincial governments, and these are not small monies to further train our people. And talked about approximately 250 plus people to train whatever level we think is appropriate within the construction industry. So that does a lot of good for us. And we come down to individuals too. We are we extend those opportunities, whether it be a pilot, we extend those opportunities to our people. We talk to our Cree School Board, which is the entity responsible for education in the Cree world, to try to look at providing programs that are a little bit more expensive related to individuals, and I'm talking more like the pilot training. It's not cheap to get pilot training. And we've managed to convince them, and we're looking at very seriously in terms of how we can work this out so that we can train more of our people as pilots. So in terms of any program that we look at, as CRECO sees it, it's very important for us. And it's very, very, it's something that we use as stepping stones that we can properly gear our people to have the proper certification to work anywhere they want, not just in the Cree world. If they want to go to work in Montreal, they'll be certified. As you know, the labor codes are there, and they have to meet certain regulations in order to become a plumber or electrician or whatever the case may be, and we train our people towards that.
Wow. It just it seems like incredible success, and for me, it's really what I'm so inspired by is your ability to bring private sector, the public sector, and the community together, and certainly your success, it speaks for itself. Moving forward, where would you like to see the community and the company be 5 years, 10 years from now, and what lessons do you think ought to be shared with some of the communities who perhaps aren't doing as well throughout Canada?
Well, first off, today, as we said, I consider the companies that we have pretty successful already. Pretty proud of where they've been to in terms of their growth. And today, a number of occasions, I shared a story of CRECO, where it's been, when it's done, and so on and so forth. And I think it's good for people to hear that, because like other people, we start joint ventures. Some of them are not always rosy, Some of them become problems. And I'm sorry to say, sometimes they're not resolved by the two companies signed that deal. Somebody else has to resolve the issue. But that's part of business, It's part of business, and I hope that we don't encounter those ones very much, although we haven't encountered them very much today, but I hope we don't encounter them more in the future. But that's just to say that whenever we form these partnerships, we really have to understand each other in terms of what it is we want to do, how we accomplish everything. And relative to the situation as to where I want these companies to be, like I said, I think they haven't reached their max, Mm-hmm. Somebody else is going to come along next year in terms of the presidency of CRECO or chairman of the board of companies. They're going to have different thoughts, and they're going to advance that company in terms of the ownership of the CRE, which will be really, really good for the CRE world and employment situation and the future development of my people, the younger generation, to be able to access those opportunities that might exist within those different industries that we're in, like Air Quebec, Green Construction, and so on. So I think there is more room for growth. There is more room to acquire more business, for sure. But if we measure it today, I think we did pretty well.
That was Jack Blacksmith, president and chairman of CRECO, and that interview was courtesy of Nation Talk, a Native Newswire and employment service. You've been listening to Bombsida with Jennifer Ashwasige. Bombsida is an Aboriginal news magazine program which includes current affairs, arts and entertainment, and a cross-genre of music from Aboriginal artists. Bombsida means walking together in the Anishinaabe language. Music for the program is courtesy of Burnt Project One. If you have comments or story ideas, visit my website at bombsida.com. That's B-A-M-O-S-E-D-A. And thanks for listening to Bombsida.